Jimmy Diggs here at Godzilla. Join us every Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. for the most brutal, intense, uncensored show on the net, Daily Noise, right here on LBRocks.com.
And now back to whatever crap you're listening to.
Originating from Las Vegas, Nevada, you're listening to LV Rocks. Noise from Vegas. The following is a pre-recorded LV Rocks original webcast.
And welcome back to another edition of Subject to Discussion live in LVRocks.com. I'm Sean O'Mac, Sean Daly. I am a change. I'm going to call myself part-time Sean. I'm the part-time guy here. There you go. Wow. There's a radio station here in Vegas at KDWN. They had old guy. They have an old guy doing an overnight show. His name is Part-Time Pete. So I'll be... He's got his really good radio voice. He's got all these senior citizens calling up. Oh, Pete, all this stuff. It's amazing. And they talk about these old movie stars and old movies and old shows and everything. It's a good show. I mean, he keeps the show light and fluffy. Anyway, KDWN is new owners, and pretty much he's about the only one they kept at the station. Everybody else they got rid of. So anyway, and did that just say pre-recorded? This is not pre-recorded. This is live. It's happy Thanksgiving to everybody. No, this is live. It's Tuesday. Was it August the... I got to read the newspaper. August the 8th, Tuesday, August the 8th. So who says it's pre-recorded? It's not pre-recorded. And it's podcasted, though, live on LBRocks.com.
I screwed up. I played the wrong. I should have been playing this.
Oh, that? Oh, okay. There we go.
LV Rocks original webcast. Visit LVRocks.com for studio cam and live chat room.
There we go. It's officially a live program now. All right, that was the Centurion in charge of production, Mr. Consoler. Thank you very much. And you're welcome. And I said the program's live in LV Rocks. I had my script prepared. It's supposed to be the Jimmy Diggs, the owner, is supposed to be here. I had the god of LV Rocks, Jimmy Diggs, going to kiss ass. And is at the controls. Anyway, tonight after the Political News Digest, how about that for a new title? And Chip from PoliticalSports.com will be with us to talk about the week in politics from the blogosphere's perspective. And also, if anybody would mind, the John is going to keep track of the Lieberman-Lamont race so we can see who wins, because that's going to portell things for the Democrats going into 08. So I was watching Hardball, and Hardball is going to be on actually live right now, so I'm up against Hardball, and they're doing a netcast as well. Oh, Chris Matthews, who do you think you are? And in the second hour, it'll be Jamie, otherwise known as Scully Girl. She'll be around for our review of the Stargates. And then, of course, the return of Koenig Rules. He'll be along with his review of the 4400 and some Galactica news. And the blog for the program is subjecttodiscussion.com. And the email is subjecttodiscussion@lvrocks.com. And before I get to the news, Political News Digest, and I'm going to go through what's in the papers. Yeah, of course, USA Today has the oil field closure. The British Petroleum has closed a pipeline in Alaska, and it's going to shoot up the price of gas here in the United States because this apparently supplies us with 8% of our oil here in the country. So, and that's... they're going to shoot these prices. I said, why can't Bush, sign a executive order and eliminate the gas tax? You know, between that and the states, they can get their acts together and delete, at least temporarily stop the gas tax. They'll lower the gas prices about 50 cents, at least 50 cents a gallon. So here we go. And the USA Today, they have nation's gas gauge. Currently, it's national average is $3.03 a gallon. Mid-range is $3.22 and premium is $3.34. So it's gone up 0.3 of a cent since yesterday and up almost a dollar from a year ago. So, and then also in the Las Vegas Review Journal, the only newspaper in Las Vegas, and some about the, again, they're talking about the pipeline shut down May last month, they said. So apparently some corroded areas in the pipeline and it forced them to shut it down. Also, they have the about Lebanon rejects UN ceasefire because you know what it says that they're going to stop with part of the ceasefire. They'll stop arms shipments to Hezbollah. And I said, well, how come they're not having a stop of arms shipments from the United States to Israel? You know, they got to have a clean stop. Stop all the arms shipments. That's what I think. So and so then we'll go into the Political News Digest until Chip calls in and the or otherwise known as the news to you. And today we had the from Reuters, we had the voters are ready to dump incumbents in Congress. This is from Washington. American voters are as ready to dump incumbent lawmakers as they were just before they handed control of Congress to the Republicans in 1994. This is according to an ABC News Washington Post poll released yesterday on Monday. Republicans who control both houses of Congress stand to lose the most in the November elections because of the strong anti-incumbent sentiment, and they trail Democrats in support among registered voters, the poll showed. 53% of those surveyed called themselves anti-incumbent, nearly the same as the 54% who identified themselves as such in the summer of 1994 when the Congress was still under the Democrats' control. So that's interesting. So that foretells the tidal wave coming in November. And also from today, it's interesting, but the Huffington Post is from Reuters. The SoftBank Capital invests $5 million in Arianna Huffington's blog. Can you believe that? You know, the Huffington Post, an online news and blogging site run by political commentator Arianna Huffington, said on Monday that it has received a $5 million investment led by venture capital from firm SoftBank Capital to help it expand. So it's amazing. It's amazing. I'd like to give $5 million of venture capital plugged in here in LV Rocks. That'd be something, huh? And also today from the CNN Situation Report, a new poll shows Connecticut race tightening. Senator Joe Lieberman, the incumbent U.S. Senator from Connecticut, woke up this morning and learned a new poll by the Quinnipiac University has him down 6 percentage points to challenger Ned Lamont on the eve of the Democratic primary. The new poll shows Lieberman has gained 7 percentage points on Lamont since another poll conducted by the university was released last week. I don't think it's the good idea for the Democrats to turn out Lieberman. You need some moderates in there, and I just don't like, I didn't agree with this war either. I thought we should have finished off Osama bin Laden in Afghanistan first, and then Bush should have built the case for Iraq and Saddam Hussein. And that's wrong. But we're in there now. Like I said, I believe in the MRTHA Plus plan that you pull the troops out to the borders and also protect the oil fields. I said, let the Iraqis slaughter each other. Why are the troops in the middle of the shooting gallery is something I don't know. So that we got to get them out of there, pull them to the borders. So we can't up and leave. You know, they withdraw now. I think that's what Lamont stands to do. It's just ridiculous. We got to pull out to the borders, let Iraq settle down, and then we could slowly withdraw the troops from the country as a whole. But I think Lieberman should be returned to the Senate. Just need some moderates in there. You can't have a bunch of extremists on either side of the aisle, or nothing will get done. So anyway, that's my 2 cents on that. And also you have MoveOn.org looks to Connecticut for first 2006 election victory. It's also from today. Other than the candidates, no one has more riding in this week's Connecticut Democratic Senate primary than MoveOn.org, a liberal organization at the edgy intersection of politics and the internet. With victory for Ned Lamont, the group can claim a role in helping an anti-war challenger dump Senator Joe Lieberman, who supports President Bush's policy in Iraq and has the backing of the Democratic establishment. A come-from-behind win for Lieberman would mark yet another setback for MoveOn and its parallel campaign to strengthen its credentials as a force to be reckoned with by the Democrats as they seek congressional majorities this fall. I just think Lieberman should go back. I need some moderates. I hate to say it because all the Hollywood elite are lining up with Lamont, and then Bill Clinton and Hillary and them are lining up with the Liebermans. I don't know what's going to happen. I like to see if Hillary manages to become the presidential, the president of the United States after 2008, maybe if he does go down to defeat, like it was looking like earlier today when I was leaving, she should make him her Secretary of Defense. So it's if he loses. So it looked like he was earlier, just a few minutes ago when I got here. And also from today, support unlikely from fellow Senate Democrats should Lieberman lose. If Senator Joe Lieberman loses today's primary, he's unlikely to find support for an independent run from fellow Democrats. I don't think he should. If he loses, he should go away. I don't think he should run as independent. I really think he's bigger than that. I hope he doesn't do that. But late last week, Senator Frank Lautenberg, Democrat from New Jersey, surprised election followers by publicly advising Lieberman to drop his intent to run as an independent if he is defeated in the primary by a significant margin. Speaking on NPR, Lautenberg noted that in event of a big loss, Lieberman will have to take a look at what reality is, adding that in event of a 10-point or greater defeat, Lieberman should drop his bid as an independent candidate. So, I see. Now some high-profile Democratic lawmakers, including Lautenberg and Barack Obama, have indicated that while they support Lieberman in a race, they will back challenger Lamont in the general election should Lieberman walk away without the nomination. Hillary Clinton is on record with an identical position. So, good for them. So, like I said, if he loses, he should just go away. He's been in office, what, this will be his third term, so he's been there 12 years. I mean, I think 12 years is enough. And I say if Hillary becomes a president, she'll make him her Secretary of Defense. That's I think so. And also from Monday, from the Times of the UK, critics blast U.S. diplomacy as the Condi Rice show. You know, Condi Rice, instead of the girl with the Betty Davis eyes, she's the girl with the David Letterman smile. Condoleezza Rice is coming under sustained criticism on several fronts. Some, even within the White House, have started referring to the Condi Rice show, suggesting that the Secretary of State spends too much time on television talking to a domestic audience and not enough in international negotiation. Yeah, every time I turn the TV, she's on this show, she's on Hardball, she's on Situation Room. I mean, I might as well give her own damn talk show, the way they're going. Maybe Oprah can produce a show for her. I mean, it's ridiculous. She should be over there trying to put an end to this, more of this BS that she's over trying to stop. But now this is the ceasefire that the United States and France were negotiating, and all this is Bush and them stalling this so Israel can just keep blasting. So I say Bush can pick up the phone tomorrow and end this. I tell you, I swear to God, this administration runs this country. I don't know the way Billy Joel drives, or crying out loud. Reasons to keep the GOP in power in 2006. This is kind of an ad campaign that the GOP should run to keep themselves in power. Over 22,500 troops dead and wounded in Iraq, which has been in a civil war for at least 2 years now. 46 million people in the United States uninsured. That's according to the U.S. Census. Gas prices at an all-time high. Business Week, July 23rd, 2006, as well as the USA Today from today. Also, student loan rates, the highest in 6 years. USA Today, April 18th, 2006. National debt, $8.4 trillion. U.S. Treasury Department, Bureau of Public Debt. No minimum wage increase in 9 years. Washington Post, June 22nd, 2006. Worst job creation record in 70 years. Bureau of Labor Statistics, July 7th, 2006. So that's the record they should run on. That's the record. They'll ensure them a landslide victory there, I think. So, and also from today from New York Times, Ohio Republican tied to Abramoff will retire. Representative Bob Nay, an Ohio Republican entangled in the corruption scandal centered on the former lobbyist Jack Abramoff, announced Monday he will abandon his bid for re-election. The Justice Department has signaled for months that criminal charges against Mr. Nay and possibly others, other Republican members of Congress and aides who were close to Mr. Abramoff were only a matter of time. Ultimately, this decision came down to my family. Oh, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, right. Your family. You just want to save your rear end and get out of there before the indictments fall, so you have to run out of the Congress in shame. And also from Monday from the Washington Post, and let me see who's in the chat room now, a anorexic pillow, BSG fan PT, Chris 1019, Giorgio, LO Raptor, I don't know who that is. Net Ranger, I know who that is. Myself, I know who I am. And the John is in there. Sean got a little heated last week. I don't blame Condi. The effort to talk to international pisses me. Yeah, but yeah, she's kind of Lisa Rice. They're sending her over there to play this shell game. Delay. That's all they're doing is delaying all this. You know, they're time delaying all this. You know, keep it going. You know, more time she could waste flying around, playing the piano while bombs are dropping, doing these lame recitals and all this, holding her hands. We feel sorry for you. And then back to her, here, Israel, take some more missiles, take some more bombs, drop them on their heads while we're holding their hands and saying how sorry we are for them. I mean, come on. And what else? Connecticut race could be Democratic watershed. From Monday from the Washington Post, the passion and energy fueling the anti-war challenge to Joe Lieberman in the Connecticut Senate primary signal a power shift inside the Democratic Party that could reshape the politics of national security and dramatically alter the battle for the party's 2008 presidential nomination, according to strategists in both parties. A victory by Ned Lamont on Tuesday would confirm the growing strength of the grassroots and internet activists who first emerged in Howard Dean's blah, blah, blah. Driven by intense anger at President Bush and fierce opposition to the Iraq war, I agree, but I don't think Lieberman should be turned out. I mean, the payback, I think, for Bush will be to send Hillary into the White House or a Democrat and regain one of the houses of Congress. But anyway, they are on the brink of claiming their most significant political triumph, one that will reverberate far beyond the borders in Connecticut if Lieberman loses. An upset by Lamont would affect the political calculations of Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton, who, like Lieberman, supported giving Bush authority to wage the war, and could excite interest in a comeback by former Vice President Al Gore, who warned in 2002 that the war could be a grave strategic error. For at least the next year, any Democrat hoping to play on the 2008 stage will need to reckon with the implications of Lieberman's repudiation. So, wow, that's a $10 word right there. And $10 word on a $5 show, I don't know. And also this from Jay Leno. There is now a 48-hour ceasefire going on in the Middle East. Israel will stop attacking Hezbollah, but Hezbollah will not necessarily agree to stop attacking Israel. And he goes, hey, we can't even get Mel Gibson to stop attacking Israel. So that's pretty... That was funny. And also Monday, Casey leads Senator Santorum in Pennsylvania's poll. The latest independent statewide poll shows Democratic challenger Bob Casey with a slight lead over Republican incumbent Rick Santorum in their hotly contested Senate race. Santorum's the one that ran that claim a couple months ago. They found WMD. They found, although it was old junk that was thrown away in the desert that they found months ago. So, and Bob Casey, he's the conservative Democrat who is anti-abortion. The poll found 45% of the voters questioned supported Casey, the state treasurer, while 39% supported Santorum, the number three Senate Republican. And also in Pennsylvania, they're running the governor's race. Governor Ed Rendell holds a 16-point lead over Republican challenger Lynn Swann. That's the best news I heard all day. You know, all we need, we only need these football players or movie stars becoming, you know, politicians, governors and all that. And, you know, as far as I know, Rendell's done a pretty good job. You know, I'd like to see Lynn Swann go down in flames. And you got to hold elective office. And the thing with Schwarzenegger, I mean, I hate these recalls. I mean, well, I don't know. Maybe Bush deserves to get recalled. It might be an idea. We can have a good old-fashioned California recall for Bush, you know? I'd like to see him argue his presidency with Gary Coleman, Hooker, and maybe, I don't know who else, like Russell Crowe or something like that, you know? So, I don't know. Congressional campaigns raised $893.6 million. Congressional campaigns raised a total of $893.6 million in the 18 months of 2005 to 2006 election cycle, ending June 30th, an increase of 12%. Amazing, all this money in politics. That's sickening, isn't it? The commission found that 2,080 Senate and House candidates spent $515 million from January 1st, 2005 through June 30th of 2006, up 6% from 2004, and reported cash in hand of $575 million. Oh, where's all this money coming from, you know? Santorum has been running ads about how much he cares about the environment. Oh, yeah, he cares. He cares as about as much as the environment as, I don't know what, as, I can't even think of anything. Santorum is running ads, John saying, go Casey. What's a Santorum? Rick Santorum. He's a Republican senator, so he's probably going to be upset by Casey, so we can only hope
before
so.
Before I take your questions.
There he goes.
let me speak with the American people about the situation in Iraq. This has been tough weeks in that country. Weeks in that country.
That's our president. That's our example to the world. America's education system hard at work there with him. Let's see, $893 million. It's sickening, all this money in politics. Sickening. And also we have this for Monday. Geneva report, highly critical of U.S. commitment to human rights. The Geneva hearings are over, and the final report has been released. It's not pretty, and so far as the United States and human rights are concerned. Uh-oh. Every 4 years, nations representing the conventions against torture and other cruel, inhuman, and degrading treatment and punishment, and the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights meet. Well, that's a long damn name of that group, huh? Meet to review. I don't know. They reported all the words twice, I guess, on this thing. Compliance of the ICCPR nations. An official report is issued along with a shadow report. A rebuttal from a non-government organization, blah, blah, blah. This year's 456-page shadow report describes over 100 instances of human rights violations in a response to the official report issued by the United States. Also, the United States was a mere 7 years late in developing its report, which is obligated to prepare as an ICCPR signatory nation. The report goes on to describe a correspondence between the committee and the United States as a cat and mouse game, in which the committee addresses questions to the United States, and the United States responds by saying it has already answered those questions. And the committee then says, please clarify when you answered that and what the answer was. It receives no further communications. Yeah, it's like the cat and mouse thing game they do with the all the budget requests for Iraq. Oh, yeah, we're putting the bridge fund. Also from Monday, this is a watershed op-ed from a neocon, Charles Krauthammer, showing that they've lost control of the situation. The United States has gone far out on a limb to allow Israel to win, and for all this to happen, it has counted on Israel's ability to do the job. It has been disappointed, talking about Washington, the United States. Prime Minister Ehud Olmert has provided unsteady and uncertain leadership, foolishly relying on air power alone. He denied his generals the ground offensive they wanted, only to reverse himself later. So Krauthammer is weighing in on that mess over there as well. And also, President Bush has the worst environmental record since Andrew Jackson stopped killing Indians by hand. He says, look at the air we breathe. I mean, look at it. I wanted to howl at the moon last night, but I could not see it. Our Indian friends call Bush dances around the facts. That's a good one there. That was from Bill Maher, excuse me. So instead of Dances with Wolves, his name is Dances Around the Facts. So that's pretty good. Senator fails false bid to clarify report on Iraq. The Republican chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee lashed out at the White House, criticizing attempts by the Bush administration to keep secret parts of a report on the role Iraqi exiles played in building the case for war against Iraq. The chairman, Senator Pat Roberts of Kansas, said his committee had completed the first two parts of its investigation of pre-war intelligence, but he chastised the White House for efforts to classify most of the part that examines intelligence provided to the Bush administration by the Iraqi National Congress and exile group. So it's amazing. I always say, I look when they feed on their own, you know? The LL Raptor, just pretend torture, pretend electrocution, pretend dog attacks, pretend lingering in a black pit bereft of hope. Or was that Abu Ghraib? I don't know. I think black pit bereft of hope. That's here with 2 more years left in the Bush administration, and the fear if they regain Congress, that's going to be the black pit of black pit bereft of hope, I think. And what else? Nair Bushism. He said this on June 26th of this year. Bush says, I've reminded the Prime Minister, the American people, Mr. Prime Minister, over the past months, it was not always a given that the United States and America would have a close relationship. Anyway, he should be doing stand-up. He reminds me of that old drunk, that fake drunk, used to be on the Dean Martin roast. Foster Brooks. That's who he reminds me of now, the way he talks, you know. Bleh, you know, and all that. Anyway. Wow. Wow. And also for Monday from the UK Observer, Fed admits U.S. recession is on the cards. United States faces almost a 40% chance of slipping into recession in the next 12 months, according to the Federal Reserve's own market model. As Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke prepares to decide whether to raise the American interest rates, which he did not today, bond prices and the high level of borrowing costs are now showing a 38% chance of recession, according to a model published by the Fed economist Jonathan Wright earlier this year. So you heard that here first. We slip into recession. You know who gave you this heads up. So anyway, and who needs trial by jury anyway? Yeah, it threatens our freedom. I said, we got to have, America's got to stand for something. We can't be, we need to put these trial by jury. We got to have, defend our liberties, defend our Constitution. You know, I mean, we stand for, I think we're better than these other, than these damn insurgents or whatever they're calling them now. It's crazy. This is also from Sunday, the 91-page Republican playbook for the home stretch campaigning. Next week, Republicans will tout efforts to secure America's prosperity through a variety of programs, plans for small businesses, business health insurance pooling, spending reductions, increased domestic oil drilling, and permanent death tax reform are all to be pushed at the state level. And then, and also then we had mid-month, Republicans are expected to shift gears, focusing voters' attention instead on a variety of value-based initiatives. According to their playbook, it says Democrats oppose preserving a clear definition of marriage, are blocking child custody protections, and have obstructed the confirmation of fair judges, the document reads. Republicans are committed to protecting these traditional values by fostering a culture of life, protecting children, banning internet gambling, and upholding the rule of law. Blah, blah, blah. The only one I agree on that is banning the internet gambling. That's what I agree with right there. So, and Republicans then plan to spend the month's remaining 2 weeks promoting the party's efforts in regard to Homeland Security. Oh, my God, gag me. They don't have no plan on Homeland Security. Let's just give out the ports to that country over there in Timbuktu. Approval of Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez's plan for new court-martial-like trials for terror detainees seems to be a priority, as are funding for the U.S. border, U.S.-Mexico border fence, and blah, blah, blah. So, I don't know. The way things are going now, I don't think the Republicans are going to have to worry much about governing the country for too much longer. Sunday, Pentagon silent on inquiry into Cunningham contracts. Still, it isn't known if bribery-tainted defense projects, 8 months after former Representative Randy Duke Cunningham confessed to taking massive bribes in exchange for, there's a Republican Representative Randy Duke Cunningham. He was confessed to taking bribes in exchange for providing at least $230 million in questionable defense and intelligence contracts. The Defense Department Inspector General still has not determined whether any of those projects were improper. This week, the Pentagon announced it would not renew one contract related to the scandal, but officials have been tight-lipped about the status of other taxpayer-funded work that may have been tainted, including a secret counterintelligence program. Oh, is this another one, or is this one of the other ones we already know about? Yeah, who knows? It also says here from Sunday from the Guardian of the UK, it says, don't look now. U.S. soldiers' trophy videos of Iraq make uncomfortable viewing for the American government next to TV network's coverage. Last week, the Pentagon ordered American servicemen in Iraq to stop posting private video clips on the internet. These trophy videos have become one of the more extraordinary byproducts of the modern-day warfare, as soldiers, like everyday tourists, send video images ranging from the comic to the utterly horrific back home to impress friends and titillate the fans of uncensored war. There are hundreds of hours of this stuff posted on a range of internet sites, most of it crudely shot and edited, and usually set to thrash metal soundtracks. Images have been seen recently include a close-up of a suicide bomber exploding into two, an insurgent being shot through the head by an American sniper, full-scale firefights between U.S. patrols and insurgents, plus endless images of body parts scattered about in the aftermath of the latest bomb explosion. This footage is often supported by running commentary of awesome and such like from the cameraman who has literally strapped a blah, 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 blah. So I don't know how they find time to be doing all this crap. Aren't they supposed to be, shooting everybody in Iraq? I mean, we're in the middle of the Civil War. Aren't they supposed to be, whose side are we taking in this Civil War? I don't know. Why don't we just shoot them all over there? I have no idea. And also from Saturday, there's a poll, fed up with Iraq, 55% want complete U.S. pullout by this time next year. See, I don't agree with that. We got to pull out, but pull out to the borders and, again, to the oil fields, and then, let the Iraqis settle amongst themselves, or, for crying out loud, split the country in three. John Kerry came up with that idea, and that's I think, starting to grow with some kind of credit to that. So that's not a bad idea. They're all fighting each other. Why don't we just split the country in three, evenly, in three, let the Shiites have a part, and all the rest, to divide up in three. That might be the way to solve or calm things down over there. A new Gallup poll released on Saturday revealed yet another upward bump in the number of Americans who now want a complete U.S. troop withdrawal from Iraq in the next 12 months. So 55%, with 19% supporting immediate withdrawal, and another 36% wanting it done by 2007. So, I mean, Iraq is, I hate to say this, Iraq is going to be a referendum in the elections. And like I said, all I said is, I always urge people, do not vote against somebody. And much as you hate all that President Bush, he's a damn son of a bitch, and all you're mad at him because of the damn war and everything, but you got to vote for somebody. You're cheaping your vote when you just vote out of anger. You keep that in mind. Iraq, it's a big minus, but then all the other things, of course, vote Democratic, but you know what I'm saying? But you got to vote for somebody. Like Lieberman, if I was in Connecticut, Lieberman, Lamont, I vote for Lieberman, because you know what? He was big in the civil rights. He was 90% of the time plus. He votes along with the Democratic lines. You need moderates in there to, be the bridge between these two, the extremists and Republican side as well. Another majority, 54%, now say that the U.S. invasion in 2003 was a mistake. So, no kidding, it was a mistake. And then in this ambassador, this is from Saturday, Ambassador Bush didn't know there were Sunni and Shiite Muslims 2 months before invading Iraq. I mean, where has he been? Former ambassador to Croatia, Peter Galbraith, is claiming that President George W. Bush was unaware that there were two major sects of Islam just 2 months before the president ordered the troops to invade Iraq. In his book, The End of Iraq, How American Incompetence Created a War Without End, Galbraith, the son of late economist John Kenneth Galbraith, claims that the American leadership knew very little about the nature of Iraqi society and the problems it would face after the overthrow of Saddam Hussein. That's BS. Bush's own father said if he went into Baghdad, it would create a civil war. His father knew what would happen. The neocons' next war, this is from the Salon magazine, by secretly providing NSA intelligence to Israel and undermining the hapless Condi Rice, hardliners in the David Letterman smile Rice, hardliners in the Bush administration are trying to widen the Middle East conflict to Iran and Syria, not stop it. The NSA is providing signal intelligence to Israel to monitor whether Syria and Iran are supplying new armaments to Hezbollah as it fires hundreds of missiles into northern Israel, according to an NSA official with direct knowledge of the operation. Bush has approved a secret program. Inside the administration, neoconservatives, Cheney's national security staff, blah, 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 are prime movers behind sharing NSA intelligence with Israel. And they have discussed Syrian and Iranian supply activities as a potential pretext to Israeli bombing of both countries. Blah, 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 blah. So I think with that, I think Chip's on the line. We'll bring him on. And we're joined by Chip from PoliticalSports.com. Sir, are you there?
I am, Sean. How are you?
Oh, fine. Welcome back to the program. You've been on extended leave, right?
I have. I was away. I was lucky enough to go to Europe for a few weeks and then came back. I had some intense work, so it's pulled me away from getting on your show for a little bit, which is too bad, but I'm happy to be back.
Yeah. So where'd you go? Were you over in Israel when the fighting broke out, or what?
No, thank goodness. I was away from that. I was on a ship. I was traveling from Lisbon up the coast of Europe. Ended up in, northern Spain, France, Ireland, England, Belgium. It was quite an experience. It was great.
Wow.
It was a lot of fun.
Wow. Well, we're glad you had a good time. We welcome you back. And what's the latest on the Lieberman saga?
They're reporting about 72% of the precincts or the polling places have reported in, and it's 52-48 for Lamont over Lieberman.
That's
it's been really a very interesting race here in Connecticut. You know, I live in Connecticut.
Good time. This is
one of the first times that here in Connecticut we have a situation where our vote really counts. You know?
Yeah.
Because we're one of those considered one of those blue states where you know, we're a waste of time for a lot of money.
So where'd you stand on it with Lieberman and Lamont? Who are you pulling for?
Well, my own personal opinion, I'll tell you why. First is you know, going back to the time when the Clarence Thomas and Anita Hill hearings, Joe Lieberman just couldn't bring himself to go to the Senate to vote.
Mm-hmm.
During the Clinton impeachment fiasco that was going on, Joe Lieberman stood up there and made sure that he had the spotlight on him and couldn't decide what the right thing to do was when it was like 49-49 or something ridiculous like that. So that he was the deciding factor on whether Clinton was going to be impeached. And then he ran as vice president and would not give up his Senate seat just in case he lost, because he had to go back to the Senate. And, of course, he never really pushed, like he never went for blood down in Florida and kind of let that slip away in a lot of respects. In Connecticut, he's been a big supporter of the big pharmaceutical companies. Pfizer is located here in Groton, near where Electric Boat is. And coincidentally, our Senator Joe has been a huge supporter of the military-industrial complex, and you only have to go back to what Eisenhower warned about our military-industrial complex. He's been a big supporter of Bush and his judicial appointments, feeling that the president has a right to appoint pretty much anybody he wants to, and he was a big supporter. Well, I don't know if a big supporter, but he definitely let the Alito nomination go through without any serious, you know, scrutiny. And, you know, I also have this feeling about democracy. You know, democracy is something there. You're given a choice, and you fight and you try to elect people to a particular seat. And that does not mean that you're elected for life.
That's true.
Joe Lieberman has been senator for 18 years. And I don't think that anybody, irrespective of party, whether I think that they're a Republican or whether they are a Republican or Democrat, whether I'm a big supporter of them or not, should necessarily be in office forever.
Yeah. How many terms has he been in? He's been in like three already, right?
He's been in three. This would be a fourth.
Yeah,
it would
so
mean 24 years of one person holding a political seat like that.
Yeah, that's. I guess that's.
You know,
would
be
long
enough.
We have
a situation in the Senate and the House where most of the seats are pretty locked. It's all gerrymandered, so there's very little turnover. I think it's really democracy to be locked in anything like that. You know, things should be more competitive, and here we have a situation where it is competitive. And Lieberman has, you know, he's been a fairly liberal Democrat in a lot of situations. I think
he's voted with the party.
Over.
Go ahead.
So, you know, it's a very interesting race from a political standpoint, because there are a lot of people that support him because he's provided a lot of jobs. He's been around a long time. You know, he's fairly well liked personally. You know, he gets out around the state. And again, he's been a big enabler of a lot of politics.
Yeah, and then actually, as I said, the implications, because if he goes down to Lamont, they say he might turn around and run as an independent, and then it could change the paradigm for 2008 with Hillary, because Hillary was voted for the war as well. But she managed to rip Rumsfeld a new one up there, so I think she kind of took care of that problem right there by ripping into Rumsfeld, huh?
Well, I think so, but she was sort of covering her bets. You know, she was trying to be tough on him, but she hasn't really come out and, you know, other than calling for his resignation now. You know, what was she doing before? You know, she's been kind of straddling the fence.
Yeah.
You know, most of her statements, she's been a very clever and careful political. You know, she's been taking very careful positions. Mm-hmm. And I wonder how much is motivated by her heart as opposed to her head. Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out, because she definitely is the front runner, and she's looking very strongly toward next year and wants to make sure she's in the best position possible.
Yeah.
Well, and we know what the downside is about her, that she's pretty cold and calculating.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be an interesting thing to see how it plays out with in the primaries.
Well, I mean, with Lieberman now, do you get the senses? They say if he loses, by less than 5 percentage points, it's almost a guarantee he'll run as an independent. I don't know. I would think that the party, the Democratic Party, will kind of whisper in his ear, don't do this, Joe. If Hillary gets in or a Democrat gets in 08, they'll make you a Secretary of Defense or something like that. What do you think?
I think that he's got a really tough decision on his hands. Mm-hmm. I think if a friend of mine said to me, "Look, I wouldn't be surprised if Bill kind of corners him after the election if he loses, and says he's going to run for independent." He said, "Look, you do this, you're screwed."
Mm-hmm. True. And then now,
never have anything again. Every Democrat will avoid you like the plague. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you just take the loss, you can get a high position in the next administration if a Democrat is elected.
If, when? We don't hear about this if business, right?
Yeah, it all depends on how this plays out. There are still Republicans, if they move against Bush, or if somebody like John McCain, who stands up as an anti-Bush figure, can pull a lot of that disaffected moderate to moderate conservative base to his side. He's going to be a very tough opponent to beat.
I don't know. I think McCain, like I said, as I said before, I think McCain's lost all kinds of credibility with kissing Bush's ass and then and going down there and grabbing his ankles for Falwell. You know what I mean? I mean, I think he's lost all the maverick John McCain, and he's a maverick. Everybody loves him. I don't know. And I think he's lost. Plus, his age is a problem. He looks old. I hate to say it, but he looks older than like an old man.
He's not young, but he's a smart politician. He's a maverick on big issues, but behind the scenes, he's a pretty conservative guy.
Yeah.
If you look at his voting record and whatnot, but he is also a pretty principled individual. I might not necessarily agree with his policies, but I've listened to him speak, and he seems to really speak from the heart, and he tries to do the right thing according to what he thinks is the right thing.
Yeah.
He doesn't play, it doesn't seem to be quite as many games. And as we're getting closer to the Republican election season for president, he goes down to Jerry Falwell's university and talks. Trying to kind of mend fences on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
To gain political points.
Yeah, it's pathetic.
Score a little bit there. But, he's positioning himself for a Republican run. And I think that he wants to make sure that he has as much support on that conservative base as possible.
Yeah. And then also on your blog, which is politicalsports.com, your fumble of the week, Condoleezza Rice, the girl with the David Letterman smile, right?
She just cracks me up. There's a certain part of Condi Rice that reminds me of Christopher Warner, who was the Secretary of State for Clinton. And there's something about her that I just can't stand to listen to her voice. There's something that's just not real honest about her. Here she goes, and she's talking on CNN, or she's on one of the Sunday morning talk shows. I forget if she was talking to George Stephanopoulos this week or who it was, but she was talking about how we have to stand up for democracy in the Middle East, and here we're imposing this democracy in Iraq, so-called democracy in Iraq. And she's representing an administration that has done absolutely everything possible to become an imperial government,
mm-hmm.
Whether it be in Florida or Ohio, manipulating the media, getting Secretary of States in Ohio and in Florida to stop poll counts or do whatever is necessary to somehow change the election in one way or another. And she stands up and starts talking
about the need for democracy. I find it a little bit funny.
Well, I mean, and it's useless. I mean, she goes over and plays the a piano recital for him, like I said before, like with the bombs dropping on their heads. And then I said, if we're going to go over there and be the merchants of peace, you know, we got to stop being the merchants of death by resupplying Israel with weapons and all that. And then same thing with this ceasefire. The ceasefire says that they'll cut off the resupply of munitions to Hezbollah. And I said, what about we should cut off our resupply of Israel with weapons as well? It should be a complete stop of resupplying either side with weapons. It should be a complete stop to all that. You know?
Yeah, well, you have to get the Iranians and the Russians to stop selling arms to the Syrians.
Exactly.
To Hezbollah. The Russians are selling all these munitions to these countries in the Middle East. Meanwhile, we're selling all sorts of munitions to Israel and Saudi Arabia, jet fighters, and it's almost a joke. You can't really believe it. Here, these people are intent in the Middle East of killing each other. You know, each side is just consumed with hate. They just think that they're both right, that they both have some God-given right to a piece of land, and they're willing to fight and kill each other forever.
Yeah, actually, the chat room, LO Raptor, is saying it's a freaky image, piano sonata and bombs dropping. Yeah, she should play the piano like a 4th of July musical accompaniment. While the bombs are dropping, she should be playing the piano. Beethoven's Fifth.
You know, in Apocalypse Now, the helicopter cross, you know, it's just, you know, you can't make things like that up.
Yeah, and then what else? Catherine Harris and Don Quixote, they have a lot in common, yes. That Battleac hack, Catherine Harris, yes.
She will not quit. I mean,
no,
she's so fixated. She's almost like a little kid who believes that she can do something that is so clearly beyond her capabilities.
I don't think Clinton can save her campaign if he worked for her, huh? Hello.
Oh, I don't think so. But you have to give the woman credit. She is a battler. She's not quitting. She keeps on going no matter what. Mm. She wants it. And she's been given so much advice saying, get out, it's useless, you can't do this. And she's like, screw you, I'm going for it, no matter what.
Yeah, well, Senator Nelson, I mean, he's an astronaut, he's an American hero, and, you know, she would dare go up against him. Everybody told him, you're out of your mind, you know.
Right.
And then, only thing she could hope for, you know what, she could hope for a replay of 2000. She better hope for a lot of hanging chads and all that in Florida, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. But she has her game plan. He definitely is trying to progress and convince people that she's the right person for the job.
Mm.
I wish it almost would be fun to be down there to watch this thing going on and read more of the local papers, get an idea of how she thinks she's going to gain the support.
See her go down in flames. That'd be nice to see, huh? And then also,
it would be.
Yeah, and then Iraq. When is a civil war a civil war? Yeah, that's right. Bush, but civil war this, civil war that. I mean, are they out of their minds? I mean, can't you look, especially now, Baghdad, we're going to send troops in there. You know, we reported that a long time ago that I think, was it Michael J.W. Stickings months ago said there's going to be a second war battle for Baghdad coming, and turns out it was right, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't think there's any disagreement that the United States has so badly played this particular game from the very beginning.
Yeah.
Bush and Rumsfeld were intent on just going in, taking things over, and thinking everything was going to be just fine, when it clearly didn't happen. And things have descended to the point now where, you know, it's seems clearly a civil war that's out of control. Nobody can get any control over Baghdad, and a large part of the country is caught in this thing. And the United States has never had enough troops, could never stop it, and it's like trying to stop a huge forest fire with like one truck.
Yeah, or a forest fire with a garden hose. You know what I mean, it's a disaster over there. And then, you know, now what? 31 more were killed today. They're averaging at least 100 a day civilians getting killed over there. You know?
Yes, it's quite a disastrous thing. And I don't think that anybody would disagree. And the issue has always been, well, we can't get out because, you know, it's going to only get worse, and it's going to become a breeding ground for terrorists. And that's all very true, but it seems like there's really nothing that we can do to prevent that. And the best, it seems, just get out.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I don't know. I see, again, now we're going to leave that country, you know, in a disarray. I said we should pull the troops out to the border. That way you stop more of these insurgents coming in from Iran and then let them sell things down inside the country themselves. Let the, you know, Iraqi government, fix it. You know what I'm saying?
No, it's a nice, that's a great idea. But how many troops do you need to secure the border, especially you've got this Iraq-Iranian border? It's all mountain areas, and a large part of it, and it's just like the border between Afghanistan and Pakistan, where you can't control it.
Yeah.
There's just too much movement going on. Plus, you know, the Iranians have an air force. They can drop supplies, or they can drop weapons, or they can do all sorts of things and move large amounts of munitions and whatnot into that country.
Yeah.
It's just a disastrous situation, and it certainly doesn't seem like it's going to get any better. I was reading a very interesting article. It was up on the Huffington Post, actually, today. A guy was writing about trying to stop this Israeli-Lebanon conflict, and how everybody seems to be wringing their hands. And his particular solution was to just back off and let them fight it out. You know, it's never going to end. Mm-hmm. Let these people just wear themselves out until they want to stop, because it seems that they clearly don't. You know, there's so much anger there that, and it's fed by the Iranians and the Syrians. And,
mm-hmm.
It just seems to be an impossible situation. Yeah. Any stop is only temporary.
Hey,
it only lasts for a few years.
A question from the chat. What do you think of that hearing with Hillary ripping Rumsfeld a new one? I thought it was outstanding. He's been asking for that kind of ass ripping for a couple, you know, since he got in. You know what I'm saying? And then he said he told her what he said. He said, "Oh, you'd have a dickens of a time trying to find any where he was optimistic." Well, I went looking on CNN.com. And I found he was on December 18, 2002 with Larry King. He asked Larry King asked, "What's the situation in Afghanistan?" Rumsfeld says, "It's encouraging. The Taliban are gone and the Al-Qaeda are gone," which we know now that's BS, because the Taliban is now back in control of most parts of that country of Afghanistan, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. What can you say about Rumsfeld that hasn't already been said? I mean, he's one of the most incompetent secretaries of defense that the country has ever had.
Yeah.
It's just been an absolutely disastrous policy. He's still backed by the president. People have called for his resignation. Nothing that he seems to have done has worked. Even the Pentagon thinks that he's a terrible administrator and that his strategic thinking is very flawed.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as the president refuses to admit that he doesn't do the job that he needs to do, you're sitting there watching somebody who is a terrible coach or a terrible player. You know, it's like watching a really bad team, and you have to endure the season until it's over and hope to God that the owners will get rid of the guy and start over.
Well, I'm saying Rumsfeld must have some pictures of Bush or something, because Bush should have fired him 3-4 years ago, you know?
Yeah, I'd like to see what he must be like, the J. Edgar Hoover, who had all these secrets on all the presidents, so the presidents could never get rid of him from going back into the 30s, and you know, Kennedy having all these problems, and Eisenhower, and everybody else.
Well, then you have this from February 7, 2003, Rumsfeld. He says, "It's unknowable how long the conflict, the war in Iraq, will last." He said it could last 6 days, 6 weeks. He goes, "I doubt 6 months." That was in 2003. So that's, yep. You know, that's no, that's not overly optimistic. And then February 20th, the same year, Jim Lehrer of the Lehrer NewsHour, "Do you expect the invasion, if it comes, to be welcomed by the majority?" Blah, blah, blah. And then Rumsfeld said, "There's no question but that they would be welcomed," Rumsfeld replied. And that's the thing with throwing roses at our feet and all that. And in March 2003, it happens not to be the area where the weapons of mass destruction were dispersed. We know where they are. They're in the area around Tikrit and Baghdad, east, west, south, and north somewhat. So that pins it down real well. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Well, with him, we seem to have a rolling six-month deadline.
Yep. Hello. You there? Uh-oh. Did we lose Chip? I think there's NSA, National Security, tap the lines at LV Rocks. Oh. Well, I guess we lost you, Chip. You there? Hello. Well, I'll finish reading the headlines if he comes back in, and we'll finish the discussion. And where else here? Pentagon generals warned of a Iraq civil war. That was on Friday. Two top Pentagon commanders said on Thursday that spiraling violence in Baghdad could propel Iraq into an outright civil war, using a politically loaded term that the Bush administration has long avoided. So a possible civil war. It isn't a civil war. Is he out of his mind? And then the private pessimism in Iraq grows. This is from the BBC on Saturday. In a confidential memo, the outgoing UK ambassador in Iraq, William Patti, has warned that civil war is a more likely outcome in Iraq than democracy. The BBC's defense correspondent Paul Wood assesses the ambassador's remarks in the current situation in Baghdad, waiting for an American military helicopter.
Hello?
Oh, there you go. Chip, you back?
I don't know what happened there.
I think the NSA didn't like what I was saying about Bush, so they hacked into the
line. You know, I think they didn't.
Absolutely. Or is the Lieberman-Lamont battle has overloaded the phone lines in Connecticut.
Yeah, I think that's the case.
So,
I think before we're getting close to 11 o'clock here, I just want to make sure we touch on our political sports player of the week.
Oh, yes. Who was it?
It's Nasan Nasrallah, who is the head of Hezbollah.
Wow.
I mean, here's a guy, you could not have played a better game than this guy's played. His international and national standing has just skyrocketed over the past 3 weeks. Seems like there is nothing that this guy has done that has been wrong. Everything he has touched has turned into gold for him. I mean, Hezbollah is...
Hello.
Doing an unbelievable job against the Israelis.
Really?
Well, when you look at, he doesn't care how many Hezbollah die. They're all going to Allah or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I think that he's been held in very high regard throughout the Middle East, especially over the last 3 weeks. It's like he's almost supplanted Osama bin Laden as the head of the opposition Western in.
Well, I mean, Hezbollah. I mean, it's a disaster. I mean, so Bush has got to get on the phone and have a worldwide conference in that region to get all the leaders of those countries around it together, and knock their heads together. Get somebody that's got some kind of stature over there. Powell, Clinton, Carter, Jim Baker, somebody's got to go over there and be able to calm everybody down, huh? Oh, did we lose Chip again? Oh, I think we lost Chip again. Oh, well, I'm talking to myself. Nothing new. I always talk to myself. The worst thing about talking to yourself is if you answer yourself. You know what I'm saying? And and Lieberman is still trailing 52-48% with 89% counted. So it looks like he's going to go down to defeat the way it looks right now. So I think Chip is back.
I am back. I think the NSA is really after him tonight.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. But the update by Lieberman is that he's still trailing 52-48% with 89% of the precincts reporting. That's from the John.
Looks like he's going. So I should ask you: are you a Lieberman supporter or a Lamont supporter?
After I heard everything you said, it kind of puts a different light on things. But I just thought we need some more, to keep some moderates in moderate Democrats in there. That way, the whole, it's not the extreme ends of the party. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, I can certainly understand that. However, it's one thing to be moderate; it's another thing to enable, extremism. When you have a guy that keeps nominating these very ultra conservative Supreme Court justices, or gets involved in deceptive wars, is it moderate to go along and say, well, maybe it's okay, or is it being extreme to say, hey, you guys are making huge mistakes. This is not the way we want to go.
Yeah.
If somebody goes way out on a limb, you've got to stand up and say it's wrong.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that part, the war is a mess. He should get up and said, I screwed up. The war is a mess. Hillary's starting to realize that she's got to start doing that, or she's not going to stand a chance in 08.
Yep.
So,
very true.
Well,
very
Chip,
true.
We'll let you go.
Hey, thank you very much.
Thank you.
John.
We'll have you
Thanks
on a couple.
Thanks for having me on. It's always great to be a guest.
Welcome back, and we encourage everybody to check out politicalsports.com, and we'll talk to you in a few weeks.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Bye. And we'll be back in a second hour in a few minutes with Scully Girl, Jamie. And we'll talk about about Stargate and maybe a little bit about the Lost, if she got any news about the Lost. And then Koenig Rules will be around for a review of the 4400, as well as some Battlestar Galactica news. So we'll be right back for the second hour. We'll be right back.
But I do think, you know, when I said some things in the first term, they're probably a little blunt. Bring It On was a little blunt. And I was really speaking to our troops, but it came out and it had a different connotation, a different meaning for others. And so I've got to, I'll be more disciplined in how I say things.
Originating from Las Vegas, Nevada, you're listening to LV Rocks. Noise from Vegas.
Attention, attention. See that the humans remain entertained until the end.
And welcome back to the second hour of Subject to Discussion. The chat room's on fire with the Lieberman-Lamont discussion in there. The anorexic pillows in the chat room, BSG fan, PT, Chris 1019, El Jimbo, whoever that is, Giorgio, Elo Raptor, Net Ranger, Scully Girl, myself, and the John. So once again, this Subject to Discussion live at LVRocks.com. Thank you, everybody listening live and everybody in the chat room. And, of course, everybody listening on the podcast. Thank you. And the good first hour talking about politics with Chip from Political Sports. As he lives in Connecticut, he was able to give us some information, which was not widely known about Joe Lieberman. So it's nice to know that. And now, of course, the second hour is the Sci-Fi Hour. And we'll be joined now by Jamie, a.k.a. Scully Girl, with a review of the Stargate episodes. And Jamie, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, that orchestra is nice, isn't it, when it
yeah.
starts up? And welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me back.
You're not from Connecticut, are you?
No.
We're trying to get election results from the heated Senate race over there. You know? So anyway, so how are you?
I'm good.
Really?
Still sitting with my foot up, but otherwise
oh,
good.
Yeah, that's right. You're still... How's that foot of yours?
It's better, but I still can't completely walk on it for very
wow.
long, so...
I think you got the gout. You ever hear of the gout? The gout is if you drink too much or you eat too much rich foods, I guess they said. Yeah.
Now, I've heard it before. That's the problem.
Really?
This is like the third time I've heard it. So.
Now, what did you think? Now, I got the ratings here. Now, the ratings are slowly but surely rolling in for Stargate. The Pegasus Project didn't do too well. I don't know what's going on with these series. I don't know if they're moving to a dinner night. It might be the idea. I don't know because it says here, excuse me, the Pegasus Project, of course, was the big crossover and Irresistible. It says they didn't find any better, they didn't find any help in their early season rating struggles on July 28th. After a lead-in airing of the off-network series Night Stalker earned a 1.1 rating, which is not bad, SG-1 brought in a 1.5 rating, down one-tenth of a point from the previous week's episode. And Atlantis actually held the audience. So that's good. Atlantis seems like it's holding its own, more or less. And but SG-1's losing audience.
I think they should put something like Eureka maybe on
yeah.
before Stargate. I think that would help, but
yeah,
I don't know.
How about the wrestling? Put the ECW in front of all that.
I still don't get the point of having that on Sci-Fi, but that's just me.
You know what? ECW is owned by the WWE, and WWE is on US Site Network. So it's part of this incestuous relationship that USA has with the WWE.
Yeah.
So anyway, and so the ratings are slipping. So I mean, it might be an idea. I may have to move it over to remove Eureka in front of it or something else, huh?
Yeah, might help hopefully.
Yeah. So now, what did you think of last week's SG-1? That was. Let me turn my notes over. I'm sorry. Was Insiders?
Okay. I enjoyed it. I mean, I always do. But it was the one that was about Ball and his clones, obviously. I think it was interesting how they did have him come back and the fact that it seemed to all be his clones, so they didn't actually get to talk with the real Ball. But
yeah, because he came into it was a Stargate Command, right, the mountain, right?
Yeah.
In Cheyenne Mountain. Now, in real life, they're closing, shutting down Cheyenne Mountain.
Yeah, I read something about that.
And then, so what's his name, Ball?
Ball, yeah.
Now, it turns out there are several different copies of him, right?
Yeah, he had made clones of himself before, so he wasn't killed. And in the episode, they encounter many different clones of him. It seems like that they haven't found the real Ball yet, but he basically tells them that if they help him kill his clones, he can help them find Marlin's weapon, but he's really after Marlin's weapon on his own.
Hmm.
So he's trying to trick him.
Yeah, and then, where else? I've got my notes. He says, Angel, Agent Barrett take possession of Ball, and he says the gold infiltration of the trust is a worldwide conspiracy, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they're threading more of these big stories into this series, huh?
Yeah, kind of threading them all together.
Yeah, and what else? My notes. I you know what? My VCR conked out halfway through, so I'm flying blind here. And now somebody else suggests I should do this. Now, who is your MVP from Insiders? Which character stood out, or you know, stood out among all the rest?
I think Ba was the most important, but out of the team, I still like Vala. I love the scene where they couldn't get to him, and she found the ring platform, and she's like, "I'll take care of it." And she gets them to come chase them. They're like, "You know, what the hell are you doing?" And she knows, well, they're going to activate the ring, so that's how they switch places with them, and then they never even see them there. So.
And LO Raptor is asking, is Stargate copying Battlestar Galactica with their clones? I don't think so. Are they?
I don't think. I think these are the only clones. Well, they had one of Anubis before, but he was younger, so I guess that's different.
And let's see what else happened on there. Dr. D works in releasing the symbiotic poison taken out of the balls. What else? Sam refuses to help Ball and he threatens to kill the other hostages. I mean, you know, it's a good episode. I can't understand how they're losing audience, huh?
I don't know. I mean, I thought it was really good. And it was kind of, they had Barrett definitely be uncharacteristic. He's always so, you know, calm, and suddenly he's screaming at Sam and running in there, which taking his gun in the room was kind of stupid. But then you find out at the end, it seems he might have been brainwashed. So.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's completely his fault. So.
Well, yeah, and they weaved in, and they've acknowledged that there are other SG Stargate teams, you know, because they said they find the various SG teams and gunfire breaks out. It's like all hell breaks out there, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and then they capture Sam, and then they don't know what to do.
And then, well, Mitchell, the freezer, right?
Yeah, near the end. So from what I got out of it, he's trying to find the weapon too, obviously, but he knows that the answer is in the stuff from the reliquary that, I don't know if you saw that or not, that O'Neill before had stuck his head in when he was getting all the ancient knowledge, and the whole point is that he needs to get that so he can get to the weapon first.
Hmm.
Now, but I know Sam says something about that Anubis knew, but yet he never found it, so.
Right. Now, does that tie in with Merlin and everything?
Yeah, because it's all the ancient knowledge that was in there, which obviously has to do with all the Merlin stuff, but the weapon is what they're looking for, but yet Ball's also interested in maybe taking the weapon from before that was used to kill the replicators, if they can change it to kill, he said organic, so he wants to kill everybody, you know, or as inhumans, so.
Huh. It's amazing because I said it seems like on SG-1 they're weaving more and more mythology into the series and more of these, you know, long storylines that weed in and out for the whole season. You know, and what else? What's her name? Now Vala, she really didn't have all that much to do in this episode. You know?
Yeah.
Did she? No. And Teal.
I don't know. I just always. I like her with Jackson. I tend to notice that. But, I think it was a good episode.
Yeah.
I liked everything.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that, I'm trying to think. I didn't really think that necessarily one person stood out.
Mm-hmm. And then they, a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate Insiders?
Maybe 7.
Seven, really?
That with ratings. That's me going low because I tend to rate everything really high. go by that.
Now next week is what for SG-1? That's, what is it?
Next week is called, and I have that in my notes, Uninvited.
Uninvited.
And it says that they discover a world where people were attacked by some elusive creature, leading them to discovery about its origin. I'm trying to see what else it says. It says SG-1 receives word that the creatures are appearing on other planets, and that they're discovered some hunters have been victim of a similar attack on Earth, and they want to find the origin of the parasites. But it says not all planets affected by the attacks were visited by the Ori, but they're recently visited by SG-1, so they think they might be to blame, and they have to somehow stop it.
Huh. Now, when is the one with Richard Dean Anderson? When's that coming up?
That is August 18th, episode 200. And they did show another preview during Eureka tonight, and I know at least for shippers like me, I was very happy with it because they make a point of saying that they're giving people what they want, and showed Jack and Sam getting married. I know I'm sure
really?
It's not for real, but
really,
I still think it's a good thing. But
wow.
it's basically a comedy episode. It's going to be a lot like I said before, a lot like the 100th episode and everything with. Wormhole Extreme and everything like that.
Yeah, because I remember years ago, Sam and Jack had a little something going on, right? And they never really delved into it too much, right?
No, except they did have in the one episode, I'm trying to think, was the one where they where they screwed up the timeline, and versions of them that were different because they changed the past had to go back and fix things. Hmm. And the two of them were stuck in the past. They got together, but not the the real ones. I don't know if it's because he left the show or what. I do know that once Amanda Tapping, I believe it was the convention, she said something like that she thinks the perfect ending would be to have them going to his cabin to fish.
Wow.
Because that's just kind of, you know, people will know what that means.
Huh.
And they did do that, but of course they weren't alone there, so it didn't
really
mean that.
Now, yeah, because he left the show, and now she's kind of left alone. Now, do you think she's going to end up with anybody on the series? Looks like Vala's going to end up with, Daniel, right?
Yeah, I think they're more playing on the Vala-Daniel thing. They had before started to have Sam with Cameron, but I don't know. I mean, I don't know if other people didn't like it either, because you just really don't see that now. So.
Cameron, oh, Mitchell?
Yeah,
Mitchell.
Mitchell.
I don't know about that. Yeah, isn't she a little old? She's older than him, isn't she?
I have no idea.
I don't know. So that'd be interesting. How about they hook somebody up with a character on the other show on Atlantis, huh?
On Atlantis, yeah. They seem to always have different ones going because you've got, you know, John and Taylor, and then you've got Ronan and Taylor, and then sometimes it seems like John likes Weir and just all over the place, I think, on that show.
Yeah. And so, okay, Atlantis, they want us to talk about Atlantis. I saw that one completely through. It's strange because the VCR must have some kind of a battery because it came on actually right after the theme for Atlantis. So, I mean, I got that. It was a Ronan episode. It was like he dominated the whole episode.
Yeah, I was surprised. It was all mostly about him.
Yeah, and actually it was pretty good. It had a feel kind of like Battlestar a little bit with the location shoot and all that. It had a feel to it, you know?
Yeah. I don't know, though, how much, I don't know, his visions really, or not visions, memories necessarily revealed, though, other than I'm assuming he was married. It didn't actually say if it was his girlfriend or his wife, or, but obviously there was someone that he cared about that didn't get off the planet when he did.
Yeah, and then they're on the planet, right, and they get captured, right? They all get captured, right?
Yeah, and then Ronan, besides holding a knife to another man, holds it to himself and is like, you know, it's not their fault, let him go, because it was because of him when they helped him that their race came there in the first place when he was a runner, and they tried to help him and then it screwed them over, so they blame him for people dying.
Hmm.
And I guess the race told them, you know, you find him for us, we won't call your planet again.
Huh.
So they're ready to give him over to the race.
And then I like, what's his name, gets shot in the rear end with an arrow.
Yeah, there were quite a few good comments about that. I know, like, when Carson tells him something about he was shot in gluteus maximus, he's like, that's something like, that's my ass, isn't it? And then, of course, when he can't sit, Shepard tells him that must be a pain in the ass, so... Quite a few good comments there.
Well, it's funny because, him and Shepard are like the Kirk and McCoy, seems like, you know? It seems like, Shepard, you don't watch Star Trek, so I guess.
No. Shepard, like, yeah, okay.
Shepard's like the Kirk, and then, McKay's like the, like McCoy, the comic, banner between the two of them. You know?
Yeah, I think McKay brings most of the comic relief. I really enjoy his character a lot.
Yeah, because he gets shot and he comes through the gate, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they all get hit with the tranquilizer darts, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then he's under the antibiotics and he's calling Ronan, the caveman.
I didn't realize until after he called Taylor pretty girl or referred to her somehow like that in the caveman. So, yeah, that was... Still says, they're friends.
Yeah, and then where else? I'm going through my notes. They're in a cell. The village leader is Keturah, right? And then throughout that whole thing with that little prober thing is chasing him. He has all these visions, right?
Yeah, he sees different things that I guess happened to him before when he was on that planet. Because this is his home planet he's been taken to.
Yeah.
And they've made him into a runner again. They've implanted him once again.
Really, and then and he's talking to who is that? That guy. He's trying to lure him down to where he is so he can kill him.
Yeah, he tells him he has to come get him himself.
Yeah, and then he sees him on that image. It's like the mist is coming down and the smoke. And he's talking. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you know what? That reminds me of when they on Sequest. Ever watch Sequest in the first
season?
A
long time ago, watched part of it, yeah. But I don't remember a lot.
Roy Scheider, he used to have that guy, and the same thing. He used to talk to him through the, I don't know who he was. I can't remember who that guy was, but it was an older guy, some old wise guy, and he used to talk to him like that. It was a funny little, I'm like, wow, that's like they did that on Sequest, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And what else? MVP from Atlantis, it was called Cetada, right?
Yeah. Oh, I would definitely say Ronan did have the biggest part, but I also, again, I think McKay in his comedy, I think, was a big part of it, too.
Hmm.
He kind of just pulls it all together.
Really? So that
but,
was good.
But, yeah, I mean, Ronan was definitely featured, and I thought it was a good episode. It did tell some of his backstory, kind of explains a little bit how he is, why he is, and...
Yeah, and then how, now, he told Shepard, if you kill him, I'll kill you, or something like that, right?
Right, so they let him battle, and he's losing very badly until the puddle jumper comes up and Beckett shoots out a drone at the Wraith and knocks him down. And, of course, Ronan, you think he's, like, really mad. He's like, who did it? You know, who's responsible? And then instead he hugs him and he's happy, which was completely unexpected, in my opinion.
Well, and McKay says, oh, it's my idea. And he goes, oh, who, you know, he said
who did this?
He said he killed him. He goes, well, then he did it then.
Yeah.
And then he hugged, the other doctor. Was it Carson, right? What's his name?
Yeah, I think he hugged Carson. Yeah.
And McKay said, wait, well, it was my idea.
Yeah, he has to. Only if it's good for him did he help. I also thought, too, the scene I liked was when Tayla and John are talking on the way over there, and you know, she's telling them that she didn't expect them to go so far for someone who wasn't, you know, even their own, that she feels like, you know, an outsider sometimes. She's happy, and he's like, you know, they're his family and friends, and then he's kind of, like, stumbling, saying he's not good at expressing his feelings, and she's like, you know, thank you for everything you would like to say. I think that, I don't know, I liked the scene. It was sweet.
And, okay, out of scale, did we do that scale 1 to 10?
On this one? I'd say, I don't know, the same, maybe a 7.5.
Really?
It was funnier, I think.
Now, since we're so many episodes into the seasons of the two series, which show, I think, is doing better, the third season of Atlantis and then the 10th season of SG-1, which one do you think is doing better with the story so far?
Again, I like them all. I think it seems like Atlantis stories before were always more mythology, but they're really bringing it into Stargate and keeping it going rather than having, you know, single episodes that are about different things. So I think it's starting to be that way on Stargate, but I think Atlantis seems to be getting, you know, more of the audience, but, you know, I still like both, and I still like SG-1, so.
Now, do you have any, because you're always a big fan of The Lost, right?
Yes,
now,
huge fan of Lost.
Now, they're kind of a split season, right? They're going, ABC seems like it's going to treat that the way they treat Stargate and Atlantis. They're going to split the seasons, is that right?
I didn't know. I know they did this year, but I didn't know they're going to next year. It does. It starts October 4th.
Mm-hmm.
Right now it's just repeats. But the other, they're bringing in two new actors to the show. There's an actress, a girl named, I don't know how to pronounce it, Kylie Sanchez. And so she's going to play a woman named Nikki, and she might be an interest for the new character, who's played by Rodrigo Santoro, who, according to the TV Guide, it says he might be a love interest for Kate as well. So
wow.
I don't know. They're going to
bring
him into the
love interest. Aren't they on some island and they're all trying to get off of it? Now they all have these love interests running around.
Yeah,
well,
they still do. I don't know how they're going to bring new characters in this time, though. Before, they were all from the tail section. Now I'm not sure how they're going to bring that in. But the other big thing is that they're running right now is the official alternate reality game Web Maze.
Really?
Which is online, and it features sort of the backstories that the writers don't get to tell, and it is official now. And so they give clues during the episodes. I know a lot of times right now they run commercials for the Hanso Foundation, which is in the show, and so a lot of people have gone on to that too during the hiatus, so that's good too.
Yeah. Now, is the show as good as it was when it first started, or is all these clues starting to get overwhelming, or
no,
what?
I think it's better.
Really?
In my opinion, they've answered a lot of the questions that I didn't expect them to, but they've also started new ones. But big things you never expected. Like, I never expected them to really tell why the plane crashed or why they were entering the numbers in the computer, but they did do that. And I think they're going to, supposedly, you know, they're going to be starting all new Finalizing all new things once they start the season again.
The one thing
that they're toying with, which I hope it doesn't come to truth, because then it'd be like, you mean we watched this for the last three seasons because of this reason, which is they did it in a couple episodes, and it was like, I don't know if they're giving hints or they're just trying to throw people off because they try to do that. They'll show one thing, and next week they throw you off.
Really? What is it?
Well, what I'm getting to is it's all in his head.
Oh, no.
They've said before that they've said it's not a dream, it's not in their head, it's not purgatory, because everybody thinks these things. I mean, I hope they're telling
Well, they show the fat guy and they talking to some guy in the mental ward.
Yeah, you never know what's going to happen.
That'd be hokey if it did that,
yeah,
wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would. But I think the thing, too, that was really interesting was the fact that they're trying, you know, the whole season, they're like, why are they pushing this button? And finally they think it's fake. And they're like, you know, it's like, it's over, it's fake, why did we do this? And then you find out it wasn't, that the other part of the experiment, because when they found, you know, that they're being monitored, it's like, no, that's fake. So it completely throws everything on its side, and now they've blown up the hatch, and we don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, well, now the hatch, now, is that an island, or is it a ship, or where, I mean?
It's on the island. It's one of the stations on the island, which the hatch they were in was to control entering numbers into a computer and hitting the return key or whatever every 108 minutes.
I really should start watching this show, but I mean, I was like, what in the world? I mean, it's an island, now there's hatches that go down into the island, right? I mean,
yeah, there's different stations on the island, but they haven't gotten to all the places yet.
Huh.
But they've found a couple different places, and then you have the others who are, you know, the, you know, bad guys or whatever on the island that don't want them there. And then, like we finally brought out now, you know, what brought the plane down, and it seems like some of the people, you know, are involved with the company that had to do with creating the island, and it's like you don't know what's real and what's made up, and it gets all twisted.
It's incredible. I mean, it sounds like it's more complicated than Battlestar is. You know?
I definitely think so, and now with the internet stuff going on, I think it makes it more, because it's just like they had this book that came out, Bad Twin, that is totally connected in certain ways to the show.
Hmm.
And it's like people are like, you know, are they going to show how it's connected, or is it just, you know, you don't really know yet how everything fits together, but that's why they started this game, because it's helping to connect, like, the backstories that people are really, really into it, want to know, and then we're going to find out clues, like, before it's on TV to some extent.
Huh. And then now, I saw something where the most missed character on the, that they've, you know, gotten rid of, killed off, or whatever is, what's his name? I don't know. No, the guy who was the
brother.
The brother of the one that
Boone.
Was... Yeah, he's the most missed of all the characters.
Yeah, I'd say probably the least missed is Anna Lucia.
Anna Lucia.
Although I did like her. Most people don't. I sort of did like her in some respects. But that was, I think, definitely the most shocking episode of the season, was when they killed her and they killed Libby.
Huh.
So they're killing off a lot of people. You never know where it's going to go.
Well, how about that one that was arrested for DUI? Did they kill her off?
Yeah, that was... Michelle Rodriguez.
They killed her off?
That was Anna Lucia, yes.
Oh, see.
So, I mean, it's been said, you know, it was because of that, and then they've denied it, so you don't really know.
I'm sure it is.
Yeah, they want. It seems like she's
a
big,
you know,
troublemaker.
What?
Huh?
Now you bring that up. Uh-oh. Now I would say yes, because both her, I think her and Libby were both arrested for
DUI. That's right.
DUI.
The blonde. Is she a blonde?
Yeah, the blonde.
Yeah, two of them were both arrested
for
DUI.
They were both arrested.
I don't know. They said they had the storylines way before, but you never know. But I guess also they've said that Michelle Rodriguez caused problems on the set, too.
I believe
she was already out. Well, she was already on probation in L.A. for DUI,
something else.
I think. Yeah. Or something else. She was already on probation for there, so I'm almost positive they got rid of her and Libby, because you don't want, you know, come on.
Yeah.
You're shooting there, you don't want all this.
Yeah, you distract from the series with all this BS going on, you know. Ian Somerhalder, yeah, that's who it is.
Yeah, that's
Net Ranger. Actually, he was in My Life, what's it called? My Life is a House. It was a Kevin Kline movie he was in with him and Mary Steenburgen. Excellent movie.
The only thing I can think of that Libby character, she was in the Titus series.
Oh.
Christopher Titus.
Oh.
I mean, that was funny.
Did they kill her off because of that? We forgot.
Actually,
you're in that damn show.
What? Episodes and flashbacks, though. They didn't completely run her out of the show yet.
Huh.
But Michelle Rodriguez, it seems, is definitely gone. I just am really curious how they're going to bring new characters into the show. I mean, when they had the tail section of the plane, it was different. But now, well, how other people are going to end up on the island.
I think the Enterprise is going to fly by and they'll beam them down.
Yeah, maybe.
Or the Galactica, one of the Raptors will crash. Well, it's around. Yeah, one of them will jump and then, who knows, they'll land there. Yeah,
that would actually be funny.
Yeah, throw Apollo in the middle of all that mess. Huh? He could fight out with what's his name from Party of Five. What the hell's his name? Is he still on that show? Matthew Perry? No, what's his name?
Matt. Somebody. You said that, and then I lost my train of thought.
Fox. What's his name?
Yeah, Matthew Fox.
Yeah. Throw him in there. You know. So, but yeah, it's. I should start watching that Lost because it sounds like it's going to be on for years. Because you know, I told Koenig, you know, these sci-fi shows, you know, basically Lost is a sci-fi show now. You know,
the
networks usually don't have any faith in these shows, and they never last. Look, all the ones that are on in the fall, they're all gone now, except for.
But this one's really lasting. It's got a great cast too, which helps it out. I mean, a lot of really good actors.
And the producer is J.J. Abrams, right?
Yeah, and also Damon Lindelof works on it.
He's a genius.
Well, I think he quit now, but was working on it anyway.
Yeah, and he's the one, they picked him to do the next Star Trek movie. So, I mean, you know, he signed some huge deal and everything, so... But I don't know. It's hopefully now. Hey, the one guy, the older bald guy. I remember him. He was on Millennium. He played a character on Millennium.
He was a big part of Millennium. Mm-hmm. He was also in Harsh Realm and X Files. I could go on for a while. But but yeah, he also was an Alias too, which is probably why JJ hired him.
Yeah, actually, Net Ranger is saying that how many survivors do they say were there? He says there are like 30 extras in every show that they never focus on.
Yeah, they. That way they can, well, I guess they could add people that way. I didn't think about that, the ones they haven't talked about. But, yeah, there's, I think they started out with 42 or something, and people have died, and there's been a baby born, so it keeps changing. But, yeah, I didn't think about that. There is a lot that they show in the background and never mention, so I guess they could be already on the island. They just haven't talked to them.
Actually, L.O. Raptor has the solution for Lost. It says the Battlestar Galactica arrives and finds out it's a Cylon project on Earth. Hey, they're all Cylons. That's why he keeps turning up. The Galactica's involved in everything on TV. I think they're behind that Joey show bombing so badly. You know what I mean? actually, and Vince was saying that bald guy was also Admiral Pressman in the last season of Star Trek: The Next Generation. So.
Terry O'Quinn. He's been in a lot of different things.
Yeah, he was great on Millennium. I missed that show. That show was creepy as all can be, you know what I mean? Millennium,
great,
but it was
though.
outstanding. You know, and then what the guy who start, what's his name? He started in it. I can't remember his name for life, but he's got that rah-rah-rah voice.
Hendrickson?
Lance Hendrickson. Yeah, excellent.
Oh yeah, in Millennium, yeah, Lance.
And he did another one with I can't remember the guy's name. It was on a prison break. It's like a futuristic prison. They drop him on an island.
Harsh Realm, you mean?
No, Lance Hendrickson.
Lance Hendrickson.
He was in a movie with, what the hell is the guy's name? And they drop him in an island. It's a prison movie.
No Way Out.
Ray
Liotta.
Yeah, that was
an awesome movie.
That was outstanding. Have you seen No Way Out?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, he played like
I think it's called No Way Out.
I think something like that. He played like the leader of this one sect that's on the island, the prison island prison. And this other guy was on the other part of it.
Yeah,
and,
it's like the prison was the island.
Yeah.
And you had the
two tribes.
You had the one that had the fort, and they had like.
Mm-hmm. A society, kind of.
They had
the one.
Yeah, I guess they had like a society. They had a leader. Yeah. You had to do chores every day. And then you had the outsiders who were just renegade. They would try to
pillagers.
Pillage.
Yeah.
And they had no rule except there was one leader.
Yeah.
That was it.
That guy with the long hair. I mean, it was outstanding. I'll have to go see if I can find that now.
Yeah, that sounds really good.
Yeah, if you get a chance, see, it was outstanding. And how then they.
Yeah, I bought the. Back in the day, I bought the.
CD?
VHS. Oh. No, I wasn't in the DVDs yet then.
And at the end, it shows how you know, he gets off the island and everything. I don't want to ruin the whole thing, but it's
Ray Liotta is the main character.
Yeah. Maybe. So anyway, I didn't mean to go off on that, but I mean, it's, Lance Henderson is outstanding. I mean, boy, if anybody should be on a series, it's him. You know?
Yeah, he's a good actor.
Yeah. So, but Jamie, at the end of over our time here. We went over with you. Sorry.
That's okay.
And Koenig is in the wings. He's been off for a week, so I'm sure he's chomping at the bit. So, Jamie, we'll talk to you next week.
Okay, sure.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Have a good
Bye.
One. And it was Jamie, otherwise known as Scully Girl. He kind of went off on the No Way Out and everything. But, I mean, there's a lot of, Ray Liotta's outstanding actor. And that movie was outstanding.
No, it was called No Escape.
Oh, No Escape, whatever it was. No Way Out was the Stallone movie, I thought I remember. It was Hogan's movie. Yeah, No Escape. Yeah, it was No Escape.
Yeah,
No
Kevin
Escape.
Kevin Dillon was in it.
From,
I mean, you'll
Entourage.
Recognize a lot of people when you watch it. Mm-hmm. You'll recognize a lot of people that have been in other movies.
Yeah. That I like to see that be turned into a series somehow. I mean,
yeah, you know what? That'd
be outstanding, huh?
It's not too bad. Yeah.
Yeah, the battle between the two tribes and the prison, and you can always add more people to it, have them drop more people on the planet. I mean, there you go. There are new characters all the time.
Yeah, you know, look at this guy, the guy that played Merrick, the bad guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, Stuart Wilson.
Ah.
He's been in.
Wow, look at that.
A lot of stuff.
Yeah, I think he was in like one of them Civil War type of shows too. But
Ian McNeice, you won't recognize him by name, but when you see his picture, he's
that
been
fat
in,
guy. He was like the tailor.
He's in Rome.
Rome.
HBO's Rome.
Oh, he was in.
Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
He was in Dune. The new Dune that was on sci-fi.
Oh, the new Dune?
Yeah.
He was in White Noise.
Ooh. And, of course, White Noise 2 is starring Katie Sackhoff.
Yeah, Children of Dune, the TV series. He was in that.
Oh, I didn't see Children of Dune. I saw the first Dune. I didn't see the Children of the Dune. But outstanding. So I think in a moment we'll be joined by Mr. Koenig Rules. We can talk about the 4400. And he says he's got some Battlestar Galactica news, so we'll wait for him. And that might be him there in the wings. And what else? Scully Girl. I like hearing about Lost. I said I really didn't want to get involved with Lost because just the track record of these damn networks with these sci-fi shows. You know what I mean? Why? Same thing with the original Battlestar Galactica. I remember sitting down and watching that first episode. Remember, it was 3 hours. It was a 3-hour premiere of Battlestar Galactica, the original. And it was a Sunday night. You watched that from 7 until 10. You know, and then, of course, the show petered out after the first season. You know, it's just like, why? You know, and then they took it off the air, you know, in 2 weeks on Battlestar Galactica. You know, I mean, it's just, come on. You know what I mean? But all the other sci-fi shows, never last. You know, what is it? Surface is gone, right? Excuse me. Night Stalker is gone. I don't know why I'm burping for him. Sorry, I'm drinking water. I don't know why all of a sudden it's giving me the burps. But, Invasion, isn't that gone? I mean, all these shows. I mean, you know, Space Above and Beyond. It's another one I like. That got yanked off the air. The only one that really survived was X-Files. And I don't know if you really consider that I guess it's kind of a sort of drama / sci-fi show. I don't know. And let's see, the chat room, Invincor saying, Nazaro, part of this is trying to, we should maybe bring him on next week, Invincor, to talk Doctor Who. We really haven't had much of a Doctor Who update. So I don't know. Let's see about Koenig 2 weeks in a row, or I don't know. Well, maybe we can figure it out. And he tried a new game on BBC Doctor Who. I didn't know there was a game. The Undersale part of this is going to skip the Christmas invasion and go straight into Tennant's full season. So I think Koenig might have that. And so we do have, according to delving back into the politics for just a moment, Hardball .msnbc.com. Yes, says 3-term Senator Joe Lieberman concedes. And see if there's anything else here. It's too bad. If he does decide to run as independent, it's too bad. I mean, the people have spoken, I guess, so we got to kind of live with it like they did on Galactica. The people have spoken. Their choice is Ned Lamont to be their Democratic nominee for United States Senate of Connecticut. And Lieberman, hopefully, you know, he's been in there for all those years, 18 years, so hopefully he won't run as independent and split the party in half. Hopefully Clinton, Bill Clinton, or somebody would get in his ear again and say, hey, chill out for a while. And if Hillary gets in, you could be the Secretary of Defense, Secretary of State, or you know, who knows what. But I really would like to see him stay in because need the moderates, you know, as much as I don't like this war in Iraq.
He says I need to be paid time and a half.
Wow.
Since
yeah, it's in the mail. So I think now, if you knew my finances, you know. Anyway, well, you don't know, I'm now a bus driver here in Las Vegas. Call me Ralph Cramden now. So anyway, I think now we'll be joined by Mr. Koenig Rules with our 4400 update. There we go. And Mr. Conan Gruhls. Are you there, sir?
Yes, I am.
How about that music?
Yes. How about it?
Welcome back. We missed you. You've been gone for weeks.
Yeah, I know. But boy, what a welcome back with reviewing the 4400. Did you see it?
Yes, it was outstanding.
And did you know what happened at the end?
I couldn't figure it out.
Because you didn't see
the second
season. That's Jordan Collier, the one that died.
So
he shows up at Sean's wedding.
Yeah, so now he's alive now?
Well, that's his power, supposedly, that he can be shot and killed, but then he can come back from the grave.
Huh.
But basically, the reason he was off the show is he sails around the world, and he cleans latrines. He does scrapings of the boat and stuff like that. And so they work around his schedule. So in season two, the first six episodes he was in it, and then the last seven he wasn't. And now he wasn't in it the first nine, and he'll be in it the next four.
Huh. So
it's cool, though, I mean, because it's like bringing back a lot of these characters, and it's a lot like BSG.
Yeah.
It really is. And I just like the whole premise. Peter Coyote, excellent.
Yeah,
he's
an outstanding actor.
Isn't he?
Yeah.
And he's great even as a bad guy.
Now, this one was called Starzl Mutation?
The Starzl Mutation.
Wow, what a
where name. Apparently, these guys that have this mutation, if they breed with the 4400, they can produce children also with these powers.
Wow. Yeah, they started at that park with the male hookers there, and
I didn't know. I was sort of figuring that was it, but I figured, well, this is supposed to be sort of like a general sci-fi show, so it had a little bit off colors.
Yeah, and then with the guy's name Darren, he touches Tim, and he screams bloody murder, huh?
Right. It reminded me of a Night Stalker episode where the guys just shrivel up.
Yeah.
And are mummified. It was excellent, and I thought the really telling part of that whole thing is when Sean is smoking that cigar, and which has been touched by the hands of a 4400 that can predict a possible future.
Mm.
And you saw that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You saw that. I mean,
yeah, he puffed the smoke, poof, and he sees a vision in the future. And
right.
He kills, what's his name?
Isabel's father.
Yeah, whatever his name is. Richard.
Richard.
Yes.
He kills Richard?
In the vision, right?
In the vision. And then in another vision, he sees Tom dying, and I guess it's a major catastrophe, and Tom is dying, and it's sort of like I'm really curious how this whole thing is going to wrap up by the end of the season.
Yeah.
It's just a phenomenal show. You got it where it's really moving now.
Yeah, when he leaves, what's her name at the altar, right? He leaves Isabel in the center, and he takes off.
Yeah, but I'm still, it looks like from the coming attractions that Jordan and Isabel are not going to get along with each other either. So I don't know what's exactly going on here, whether it's going to be humans versus 4400, whether it's 4400s versus 4400s. But, you know, I mean, I'm trying to predict what's going to happen by the ending.
Yeah, but then he smokes that damn thing again, and then he shows what's his name dying in his arms,
Tom,
and he goes back to talk
Uncle
to
Tommy.
Uncle Tommy, and he goes back and talks to Richard,
right?
You know, and he tells him go through with this marriage, right?
Right.
Yeah, and he said
because he thinks that it's going to be a greater catastrophe if he doesn't marry Isabel, because then she'll use her powers for evil.
Yeah. Well, and then, well, they said thousands would die if he didn't marry Isabel, right?
Right. But I think what's going to happen, and they did this on Doctor Who a lot of the times, by going back into the past, these future humans, by manipulating the past, they're going to actually create the very event that they're trying to avoid. I think that that's the paradox of this whole thing. They're not going to be able to avoid the destruction of the human race anyway.
Yeah, and then he smokes it a third time.
Right,
and he
sees, three times, right?
Yeah, and he says this is all this war breaking out, right? And the 4,400's been used as like a militia or army or something. And he goes to the wedding, and then that's the big shock. You're right. What's his name's alive, right? Jordan Collier?
Yeah, who looks like Grizzly Adams. A younger version of Grizzly Adams. But you know what? I was telling Michelle, my wife, I bet you Jordan crashes the wedding. And it was so great when I saw him there, because I was feeling, what am I going to talk to Sean about this week? Mm. I told him Jordan was going to be on.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like the last minute, and then Sean, and I figured, this is wonderful, you know?
Now, are you married to Michelle Forbes?
What?
Are you married to Michelle Forbes? Is that it?
He married Michelle
Forbes? No, are you married to Michelle Forbes?
No, why?
Oh, you said Michelle, your wife. I thought you were related
to
Michelle.
No.
Okay.
No.
I'm just checking.
Michelle Iacino.
Uh-oh. You gave out your real name?
Uh-oh. No, that wasn't my real name.
No. Your real name is...
do we have a sound effect?
Jim Almost is your name, right?
Almost. Yeah. Or Almost.
A-L-M-O-S-T. Now, wait a minute. Somebody's asking, what do you think about the plunging ratings for the Stargates?
Well, all I can say is, thank God Battlestar isn't associated with those two, because it would be plummeting, too.
Really?
I think people have just had enough.
Really?
Of the Stargates. And Atlantis and SG-1 and Atlantis have been wavering. They've been going back and forth. A good one, a not-so-good one. A good one, a not-so-good one. This week, Atlantis, I really liked.
Yes.
SG-1, I'm going to disagree with some people that really liked it. I just thought, you know, all these balls, you know? I mean, did you see it?
Yeah, I mean,
It
was okay. Atlantis, like I said, I liked Atlantis a little bit better. Especially last week's was funny. It was off kilter, but it was funny with the Richard Kind in there playing it.
Oh yeah, that I really liked. It reminded me almost like of one of those old Buck Rogers or Space 1999s with only one guy, Shepard, who can really see what's going on, but everyone else is affected.
Yeah,
I like that one.
Classic Next Generation episode where something's off on the whole episode, yet one character manages to figure out the whole thing. You know?
That's right.
With the 4,400 now, I asked Scully Girl, now, who was your MVP from the 4,400? Who stood out the most as a pivotal character?
For the whole show?
No, the whole, just this episode.
You know, I think it was Sean.
Really?
I mean, what I've been seeing is they focus on a major character in each episode, Tom a lot, and Diana. But I think it was Sean in this episode. Isabel, they're not focusing too much on her. I mean, it's only through Sean.
Yeah, well, she kind of dominated those first couple episodes, right? So they kind of pulled her back a little bit. You know, people
get
sick of looking at her.
You saw all the episodes, right?
Well, this season, yes.
Right.
All four of them, right? And then I like it. I mean, it's a good series. I'm struggling to get to know these characters and all that. So I don't know if I went.
Would I lie to you? I said Doctor Who was great, and you said nah. and then I said 4,400 is good. Nah. You know, I mean, I'm not lying to you.
Yeah. Well, you also told me Surface was good, and the other one's good, and
Surface was good.
They canceled it, though.
It was okay. Yeah. I mean, but you heard about the latest with Doctor Who and Battlestar, right?
Oh, no. What, they're going to cross over?
Not cross over, but they're going to be together.
Ah, we predicted that a long time ago.
I mean, it sounds like sci-fi is making all this happen. Remember, sci-fi wanted to show all 20 episodes almost without interruption, and they're going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, now, second season of Doctor Who with Battlestar on September 29th, the first two episodes of the new season of Doctor Who will be shown. October 6th, two episodes of Battlestar Galactica. And then October 13th, Doctor Who and Battlestar. And there's going to be a third, I think, a new series before Doctor Who.
Well, they had that, was it Dresden Files?
Yeah, some people have been saying that that's not going to premiere, that they haven't really started filming it or having the episodes ready, but I was thinking the Dresden Files was going to be the next series.
Or Torchwood, huh? No word on Torchwood.
Well, Torchwood, I've heard is that they're filming it, but it's not going to be as dark a series as they originally thought. And did you hear, I'm sure you haven't, that there's a possibility, I told you, of the K-9 type of spinoff, but a Sarah Jane Smith spinoff.
Oh,
this is with the BBC now.
Wow.
With the character who played Sarah Jane Smith in the original Doctor Who makes a guest appearance in the third episode of season 2. That she will be doing her own series, sort of like the Big Finish CDs with her doing it. So
she can do
the Doctor Who stuff.
So she can do a TV series of her own, or
yeah, it's going to be a TV series. Wait, I mean that's nothing is definite, but word has it that might be the spinoff, another spinoff series.
Wow! And actually, NetRanger is asking: has Koenig heard the thing in Vinstor mentioned about the Christmas episode out of order?
The Christmas episode is not going to be where they start out. It's going to be shown around Christmas time. So, if there's sort of like an abrupt start to the season because the Doctor has gone through a regeneration and stuff like that, they're going to show the Christmas invasion around Christmas time.
Really? Oh, so Sci-Fi is going to air it, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, it is going to be a little bit out of order, but I'd rather see these new Doctor Whos are great. And I'm going to say this, too, and people are not going to like me. I mean, Tennant he's just great. The one thing about Eccleston, he was great, too. He was fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
But he would always distance himself from the humans. And even Rose at times, but this Tennant, I mean, you see a different type of Doctor, how he reacts to Rose. But he falls in love with another character in episode 4. It's sort of like you would never dream Eccleston doing half of what Tennant's doing.
Well, that's good, and you said
it is good.
Tennant's a huge fan of the series and everything, so which is outstanding. Is they're fantastic, right?
Yes, fantastic.
And then
you almost forget. You really forget Eccleston because Tennant is such a good replacement, and he's more a Who fan.
Let's hope so.
I mean, he did a lot of the Big Finish CDs.
Yeah. Now BSG fan PT is asking: any progress on Caprica? Has Larry Hagman been signed?
What?
Has Larry Hagman been signed to a role? Joan Van Ark? Is she going to be on there?
Geez, could you imagine how old those would be? But my understanding is it's not going to air until the fourth season of BSG. But my prediction is I'm not going to say the fourth season of BSG is guaranteed. Nothing is guaranteed, but Aaron Douglas had commented to some of the people at Comic-Con, or at least one person, that it looked very good that BSG would be picked up for a fourth season. I would think they would almost have to.
Oh, yeah. With the spinoff coming, they'll have to renew the Motor series.
But isn't this great? I mean, it starts to premiere in October with another new season of Doctor Who. I mean, if these two shows don't get the ratings, what makes me think they will is Eureka. The pilot even outstripped EWC.
ECW.
Yeah, whatever.
Yes, yes, ECW.
It got a 3-point-something in the rating.
Yeah, so maybe there's some credence to the idea about moving those shows off of Friday night, because, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think so, though. I'm really wondering if Battlestar and Doctor Who really get like 2-point-something in the ratings, then it would be an indication that people are just, I hate to say this, fed up with Stargate.
Huh. Yeah, but you said they're supposed to be working on yet another spinoff of Stargate.
They're supposed to be doing another spinoff plus a movie. And the only reason they're thinking of all that is because internationally it's a success.
Oh, yeah.
Internationally it just takes off.
Yeah.
But
here on Sci-Fi, it's gotten, geez, both shows have just plummeted, you know?
Well,
the repeats of The Night Stalker are doing almost as well.
Yeah. Well, Invincor is saying that there's a pilot for Sarah Jane Investigates. It's in the works.
Well, pilot or potential series, right?
Yeah.
Right. And I'm wondering if it's patterned off of the Big Finish CDs. I got a couple of those, and they're pretty good. So.
Now, any news on the webisodes for Battlestar Galactica?
No. I mean, they were supposed to, I thought, start up by now. But altogether, right, it's about a half hour.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if they're just going to release a slew of them, like, if there's 10 of them, right? 10 of them, about 2 minutes apiece. So I'm wondering if they're just going to release a slew, like the first five all together and then the final five all together.
How about Mrs. Ron's contest that she's running on the sci-fi message board? She wants everybody, apparently she's going to give prizes out for an essay about why you like Battlestar Galactica. I guess have you read that yet? Some of the prizes are going to be like an autographed script and all that.
No.
Yeah, and one prize is supposed to be a weekend in Las Vegas with Aaron Douglas. No.
What happens if you're a guy?
Gambling with him. partying with Aaron Douglas in Las Vegas. That came out wrong.
You got this beautiful room here with Aaron Douglas.
Oops.
It's like, what?
I'd rather spend a weekend with Katie Sackhoff, but that's all right.
Are you saying that it'd be okay to spend a weekend with Aaron?
No, gambling and hanging out.
Remember, he touched you.
No, yeah, he touched me. That's right.
I'm touched.
And then Scully Girl said, where is this at? It's on the sci-fi board, sci-fi.com.
Yeah, is that one of the Mrs. Ron threads?
Yes, yes.
She sounds like a school teacher, doesn't she?
Well,
you know, you write the best essay.
Well, I think they just want to spur people to come to the boards. The board's been
so why do you like Battlestar, Sean? Well, it gives me a half hour to talk about it.
I don't know if I'm qualified, because I do all these Battlestar Galactica. If I win, they might think it's tainted, because I bring on Katie and Aaron, and I've been talking about the series for, good Lord, since January of 2005. You know what I mean?
Right.
I don't know. I think I'm going to start my own contest with Hangar Deck 5. I think we're working on some kind of contest as well.
Who drinks the most or what?
I don't know. Khan came up with an idea to have something that people are going to have to go back and look at the miniseries to come up with the answer. I'm like, oh, that's an idea. Everybody have to dust off the miniseries,
Right.
I don't know. So we'll see.
Well, they are going to be focusing on Earth again, with these episodes.
Well, that's good.
I think around 309 or 310. They're going to be revealing the next link to Earth. So
another one. I thought that arrow was a point of Earth.
But there's more. There's more. So what apparently was in the miniseries, something that was perhaps mythical and not even real. It seems like over the course of now three seasons, that it looks like Earth has become a reality. So I would say that's been one change from the miniseries where you possibly thought, well, Adam is just lying about the whole thing. There is no such thing as Earth. And now it's sort of like, maybe they'll have Galactica 2007, huh?
I don't know.
With the hover jets, the motorcycle.
And the Rangers. With Glenn A. Larson's children are now
be his Super Scout.
Now be his grandchildren, I guess now. But I don't know. We'll see. Hopefully the webisodes will start, and the fever is starting for the third season. And with Mrs. Ron's essay contest, I'm sure it's only going to stoke interest in the third season.
You know what? I have a feeling that the reason that they're releasing Who with Battlestar is probably because of your show.
Oh.
No, I mean it. How many weeks have you covered Doctor Who?
Endless.
And how many weeks have you covered Battlestar?
Wow.
And I think on the boards, too, if they frequent the boards, they see there's a Who audience there I'm wondering if we can grab some of the WHO audience for Battlestar.
Yeah, I said that before.
So I credit you with that, Sean, regardless of what people say about you.
I think they sent that check. I think it got lost. Same thing with the check I've sent you. And then
I want my $5. I can eat half a burger at Burger King.
Or a White Castle.
Oh, I could eat about 20 of those.
Absolutely.
You know?
Uh-oh. That was the fatal last words was White Castle. You don't mention Sliders on the sci-fi segment. It blows.
Sliders was a great series, wasn't it?
No, I meant the White Castles. Anyway, Koenig, we'll let you go.
Yes, watch 4400 this week. It's going to be a killer week.
Very good. Okay, thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
And that was Koenig Rules. We thank him for being on. Also, I want to thank Scully Girl for being on, as well as Chip from PoliticalSports.com with our Political Hour. Very good. And tomorrow morning is Daily Noise. Friday, I'm not going to mention that first show. King Hesh is on Friday night. And Sunday is Carnage. I'm Sean Mack, Sean Daly, SubjectToDiscussion.com. Good night and have a pleasant tomorrow.